Welcome, everyone, to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast. I am your host, Jimmy Traina. Thanks so much for listening. We've got Kenny Mayne on the show. Long, detailed interview with Kenny talking about his exit from ESPN and what he's up to now and the state of sports media. Good, long conversation with Kenny Mayne, who is very, very funny, as you all know. Before we get to Kenny, well, let me also tell you, we have the Train of Thought segment following Kenny Mayne's interview with my buddy Sal Licata, where we get into some things about the Tom Brady doc, Man in the Arena on ESPN+. There's a new in-season Hard Knocks with the Colts. We talk about the latest episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, get into something on Steph Curry dominating on the road, and whether an opponent going into a road arena and lighting it up is one of the best things in sports when the crowd starts turning on their team and siding with the opposing players, as Curry did one night this week in Brooklyn. So that's after Kenny Mayne. Before we get to both of those spots, let me just tell you, if you missed any recent episodes of the SI Media Podcast, to check them out in the archives. Last week, we had Becky Lynch from the WWE and The Ringer's Kevin Clark. 2 weeks ago, Al Michaels. 3 weeks ago, Chris Long. 4 weeks ago, Jeff Levy and Jeff Garland from Curb Your Enthusiasm. So if you miss any of those, go into the archives, listen to them, download them, and subscribe and leave a review if you can do that. That would really be appreciated. All right, let's get to this week's episode. Kenny Mayne followed by Train of Thoughts right here on the SI Media Podcast. All right, joining me now, first time for me on the SI Media Podcast, and he's become a pretty popular podcast guest since leaving ESPN. Long time ESPN stalwart, very popular, Kenny Mayne. Kenny, how are you?
Thanks for having me. I just signed up because I thought your name was cool. It sounds like a rapper. I thought you were a rapper when I first saw your name.
I can't say I have any rapping skills at all, unfortunately. I have no singing skills at all, actually. So
I love to sing. I rapped for Snoop Dogg this summer. I did the Olympics for Peacock.
Yep.
And long, long ago, we did a story when I was doing the pretend football stories at ESPN. We had my niece who's a singer. We had John Legend on piano, Snoop rapping, my sister and her church choir, gospel choir, all that together for the Peyton Manning dance, it was called. So I made up a really stupid rap that I always wanted to do for Snoop, just as a thank you, as a silly tribute. And when I was on his show during the Peacock time, I just like, screw it, I'm doing it. Like, I don't want to do it now, but I did do it then.
Was Snoop impressed?
Seemingly. I mean, I can't sing. Beats weren't, it was like the D, the O, the double G would like to take the microphone from me. So I think I had this whole thing and he was laughing, he and Kevin Hart. So I think I'll see Snoop at the Super Bowl because I play with some veterans in this this flag football thing we do every year. And we used to do more than just at the Super Bowl, but you know, pandemic kind of hurt things. But it's a bunch of veterans with missing arms and legs and this and that, and I'm out there as their all-time quarterback, as they say, back in backyard football. We've had some others. Ryan Leaf has joined. Sage Rosenfels has joined. We had Snoop, as I'd played a couple times. Ricky Williams. Like, good top-level names and players. And it's just a cool night. The veterans get to do something maybe they used to do, and the NFL guys who, you know, haven't been around for a while, some veterans come out and do a fun night, and everybody just kind of benefits from it, just the doing of it. There's no purpose other than let's have a fun game.
That's great. And I'm sure there is a benefit somewhere tied into that. I mean, just being able to do that is.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I meant there isn't like a mission. We're going to raise 500 grand for such and such. I think we're trying to get some momentum. My friend BJ Ganim has a program where vets are working with dogs, you know, for assist. Mm-hmm. And he's trying to get more vets to have them and teach vets how to train them. Like, it's sort of a twofold thing. I have my own foundation for veterans called Run Freely. And I have a ruined ankle from football way back when. And I got this incredible device, and Gretchen and I, my wife, just said, let's do something good with it. You know, the cliche about paying it forward. But in this case, it's meant a lot. It's been 3 years running. I think we're up to like 36. I'd have to like look through all the old emails. But you put the brace on. They don't like to call it a brace, actually, a device. It's insulting to the maker, you know, because you can get a brace, you know, at Costco. You can get a brace.
Right. This is another level.
Device just for you. and you can go run with it, play golf with it, flag football with it, and you don't have any pain. It's crazy. It's
amazing.
And if you did it without it, like me, like yeah. my ankle blows up if I, you know, walk across the street practically. So that's why I'm wearing flip-flops.
It worked for you instantaneously. As soon as you put the device on, you were good to go.
True story. It sounds like one of those weird infomercials. People wake up on your couch at 2:45 and right. all of a sudden they're selling whatever. This is legit. And well, I'm not making money off it. I'm giving my money away and raising money to give them away. I always try to make that clear because some people think, oh, he's up. This is a little side hustle he's got going, you know. I ran on a treadmill on the very first day, literally day one, and not very fast. But, I mean, I was going. And right. I don't go for, like, long runs. I like to sprint. I like to play golf. I like to take hikes with my wife. And I can do all that with this device that really changed my life. And it's runfreely.org, runfreely.org.
Excellent, excellent. And if someone's listening and not watching on YouTube and you hear some noises, Kenny is doing this from his outside, I assume your backyard. It's a very yeah. nice view in the background.
Are we just using audio? There's no video?
No, we do video. We do video as well. All you right. are, I think you're the fourth or fifth guest to do it from outdoors. We had Stephen A. did it over the summer from his car, which was interesting. My personal favorite was Keith Hernandez did it from his backyard in Sag Harbor.
Oh.
And Andrew Siciliano did it from outside the NFL Network studio. So
well,
we adapt.
For two reasons. One is this is my best backdrop. It's just nature. If it's a nice enough day, a little chilly.
It is excellent. It is excellent.
On. We have some construction going on. We got dogs barking. And I have, you know, what do you want? A white wall behind me. So I decided to go for a look.
I like it. I like it. It's funny at the top, I mentioned you've become a popular podcast. I think you've probably always been a popular podcast guest, but there was an excellent feature on you, I think back in September in The Ringer. And there was a line in that story that said that you popped on just about every radio show and podcast you can think of. So I knew that was going on. So I consciously waited till maybe that your schedule cleared up from all that to Were you surprised you were so in demand as a guest after leaving ESPN?
It was a little weird because they weren't calling the week before, were they?
Right.
Right. Like,
right.
I thought I was, you know, in general thought well of as opposed to not thought well of. But, you know, I wasn't being called. I mean, I'd get calls, you know, periodically throughout a year. Hey, can you come and talk about the Seahawks or a Super Bowl? You know, those kind of calls, right? But this was more just about me. Can you come and talk about yourself? And, you know. I don't blame anybody. I mean, it was interesting, I guess, from afar, like, oh, this guy's been there a long time and he left, not controversially, but, you know, slightly, like, you know, because it yeah. came out about why I left and so forth. And I don't know. I looked at it, like, because I don't have an agent nor a publicist. I have a good attorney, Ziffrin Brittenham, Los Angeles, California. But I kind of looked at it like, why wouldn't I? I'm not trying to be like a media whore or anything here, but if people are interested in me and I can put my name out there and, you know, I'm not there to bash right. ESPN or whatever, just right. have some jokes and do an interview. That could only be good for me, right? Because I was looking right. for other things, which I still am, even though I have some things already going.
Yeah. I was in doing a little research. I was shocked to see you didn't have an agent. I did not know that about you. So that's an interesting way to now we've both said you've left ESPN. That's probably obviously not the whole story. It seemed like ESPN pushed you out, which we can get into, but being away from ESPN now where we're in this world, whether you're, you know, listen, whether you were at ESPN and leave, or you're just starting your career, we're in this time now in 2021 where there are so many opportunities out there. You mentioned you did Peacock. I'm sure you'll have a podcast down the road. There's all these different ways now, the gambling connection. Do you need an agent now since you've got it? You know, if you're just at ESPN, then maybe you don't need an agent. But now that you're probably going to carve out so many different niches, do you need an agent now? You could still do it without an agent.
So far, so good. Nothing, I mean, I got something good going with Caesars. You mentioned the gambling.
Yeah.
Happy to be with them. I'm in the commercial with the Mannings and Halle Berry and Trey Wingo. I don't know if that's out yet, but it's coming. And then I'm doing little videos for them. Got a cartoon going for them, which is really silly, but we thought it was a funny way to, like, the opening thing was, you know, people wondered what I was going to do after leaving my last job. Well, it turns out I'm a cartoon, you know, and so we've kind of ran with that a little bit. I'm doing Peacock Olympics, I already did, and I'm doing a Peacock thing this weekend, the dog show in Philadelphia with Katie Nolan. The two of us are going to comment.
Oh, that should be fun.
Yeah, it's going to be great fun.
I saw on Twitter she just started following you, so there you go. There's a benefit of the dog show.
She claims that she already was. Now, it is true. I've had that happen. Twitter has some anomalies where you think you were following somebody or you think they were following you, and it just disappears for some reason.
Right.
So I'll give her that break in case she wasn't. I don't really care. We text instead. And what else am I doing? I got something else going. I did a commercial for EA. I'm trying to remember Olipop, free shout out Olipop. So I've done kind of like a number of things since leaving at the end of May, you know, and also took a couple of vacations and got a daughter to college and another one, you know, we've had regular life going on.
Right.
I kind of declared the summer was going to be, I'm just going to take a break, like go back to Seattle, see family, see friends, do some fun things, go on a trip with the girls and figure out what I do to pay the bills and to pay for vacations and colleges, you know, and Caesars became that. And I'm very happy to be with them. But in addition, they're fine that I do other, as long as it doesn't conflict with them.
Right.
And I wouldn't do that. But if I want to make a TV show or do a podcast or go do the dog show for Peacock, Caesars is totally fine. The more I do on the side that puts me out there, and if it's any good and people like it, that benefits them additionally. Right.
That had to be why you said yes to coming on here so quick. You were one of the record. You might have set a record for quickest yeses I've gotten on trying to get a guest on.
I knew who you were. I see you out there, and you asked, "Why not? What else am I doing on a Wednesday besides
moving
clothes around the house because we're doing kitchen and bathroom?"
Well, it's impressive. You got all this going on without an agent. I must say that's a good job by you doing the hustling.
Well, in this case, I was fortunate. A lot of stuff. Calls came in, and I just had a really good call yesterday with another company that might be an opportunity in this very format here. And then there's other things that I want to do. Like I have my little whiteboard. Somehow I got moved to the basement during the construction. Gretchen told me we need a whiteboard, you know, like the classic, put out your thoughts. Cause for the first 6 weeks, I mean, it was insane. Calls were coming in. Hey, Gretchen, so-and-so just called about such and such. And it was hard keeping track of what the hell we might or might not be doing.
Right.
So I really did want to simplify it. I don't really keep a daytime or anything. I set, like when I knew I was taping this at 2 o'clock Eastern on a Wednesday, I literally set my phone for 1:48. It's like, oh yeah, I'm doing that thing at two. That's how I remember stuff.
That's how I have to do things when I have meetings.
It works for me.
Sure. Yeah.
And on the whiteboard, I got something with Marshawn Lynch. I want something to happen with him. We got a couple ideas. Got another one with Skipper, my old boss, John Skipper, down there with the
Metal Arc
group.
Yep.
And then there's a couple things on the sidelines. And then obviously Caesars vaulted. Didn't need to write them down because they called me. But I definitely have some ideas of things I would love to do now that I don't have a Monday through Friday job, so to speak.
And give me one or two of those things if you can. I'd love to hear what you would want to do.
I want to do something about Mount Rainier back in Seattle. I don't want to give all the details away,
but
there's something about, if you grew up there especially, and I have kind of the germ of something I hope grows into something bigger. That's one thing on the side, but definitely want to keep making commercials. I did a lot of them for ESPN. A lot of times I got to write them, and I pitch and I get a lot more no's than I do yeses, but I have like no pride whatsoever. Like who cares? Like the first one I tried was with Michael Jordan.
Right.
I pitched him in June, got to his people. They were very nice. They listened. We traded notes a couple times. Ultimately, they said no. And that was fine. Well, you know, shoot for the moon.
No harm, no foul.
I lost nothing other than it was kind of a thrill to be, maybe it was more in my head than theirs, but for 48 hours, I thought I was potentially doing something with Michael. You know, he didn't say no yet. Then he said no, if it got to him. But you just, it's like the old, I quote this all the time. I used to cover horse racing for ESPN.
Mm-hmm.
And Nick Zito, good old guy, trainer in New York, he had never won the Belmont. He'd finished second, like I think 8 or 9 times, some crazy number, but he'd never won until Birdstone. And that year, he's up there at the podium at the draw, and people were kind of grilling him about how disappointing you must be. You're always finishing second. You've never won. And he's like, second's not that bad. You know, like, second's better than third. It's better than fifth, right? And he finally summarized. He said, "Look, you can't even lose if you don't enter." I think that's just such a great
right. Absolutely,
that's pretty much how I live. Like, shoot for stuff. You're going to fail most of the time. You get a shitload of no's, right? And then when you get the one yes, it was all worth it.
Yeah. I wish I was a little bit better and more about like you about the, you know, I have to say the no's will get me down sometimes still, you know, but you really, it's more about how long you let the no bother you. I think like 100%. A bad no, maybe, you know, I mean, I told this story a few weeks ago on the pod, but there was a little bit of, there was a period, a short period of time over the summer into early September where I thought I may be getting Larry David on this podcast, which was like a top three dream guest for me. And I got a email like his people are interested, but want to revisit when the season launches. Then the season launched and it was Larry doesn't have time for this.
Oh.
So that no stung only because it was sort of dangled a little bit. But I have to say, if that happened maybe 3 or 4 years ago, it would have ruined a week. This time it only ruined like a day. So I'm a little better at it.
Well, it's funny. I think, you know, the old, there are two kinds of people. I think I'm in the category of go for it all and suffer that disappointment and then figure out, okay, what, could I have done something better? Could I have been smarter? Could I have pitched it better? Yeah. And then there are the others who like, don't expect it to happen because if it doesn't happen, you won't be disappointed. But if it does happen, you'll be elated. It's like, I want to just stay in reality of you really wanted that to happen, right? You wanted Larry David. You should be disappointed. I know JB Smoove now, so I'll put in the word.
I had Jeff Garland on and he was great. So that made me feel a lot better about it. So, you know, it is what it is in this. I didn't get that upset because I know he doesn't do a ton of interviews. What would have bothered me is if he was then on every podcast and radio show, then you're sort of like, okay, well, what's wrong with me?
You know what? You can probably get Chris Christie because he's on everybody's show now.
He has been making the rounds. That's for sure. Someone else has been on. Brian Baumgartner has been on every podcast this week as well. I'm curious. So ESPN, the departure came in May. You were there for 27 years.
And 1 month.
I'm curious. You've shared your feelings about it. You've done interviews about it. I know you even told my old colleague and friend Richard Deitch that they had offered a 60% pay cut. Do you feel the same way about your departure today, November 17th, that you did in, say, May, June, July?
That's hard to quantify. It's a great question, but I don't know if I can answer. I think I feel better about leaving because I know that it all turned out okay for me and my family. So at the time, I was kind of running on high energy. Gretchen called it the Candy Man ego tour as I was getting all these, you know, podcast requests and whatnot. She's probably right. There's probably something to that, but I didn't invite it. I wasn't out, you know, hey, put me on, you know, like I said, I don't have anybody fronting for me. Maybe I'd be smarter if I did, but I feel fine with it. Like, my story remains the same. Like there's no malice. And I have so many friends. I stay in touch with most all of the same ones. I play golf with a bunch of them still. I'm still in Connecticut. And I wish them well. They're, you know, I watch Monday Night Football. I'm not boycotting ESPN. They'd have to explain their side. I can't explain their side. I can only explain my side, which was they made an offer for me to stay and they said all the right things. You're valuable and we want you to stay. And it would be tough if you left and all that kind of stuff. But they set up a scenario that I think they knew my personal, like I was going to like, so we're not, there's no middle ground to this. It's this or leave. So I left and I don't regret it. Like, they made a business decision that they needed to cut back and make more money for Disney. Right. And I was one of the casualties of the salary of the salary cap situation. Like, oh, well.
Let me ask it this way. The disappointment level you had in May that they wouldn't negotiate and even maybe, you know, say, okay, let's increase the offer by this. Is that disappointment the same today as it was in May? Because I would imagine in May, that's got to be a slap in the face when you've been there for 27 years and they won't even negotiate with you. But I want to put words in your mouth.
I kind of go out of my way to qualify all my hands. Like, I'm not here to bash ESPN. I'm not. They decided, whoever they are, I assume it was Jimmy and Norby, the top people. Like, all right, here's our budget. Here's what we're paying these different people to do different things. Oh God, he's making this much. Let's cut him by 61% and have him keep doing late night, you know, Cubs Marlins games, or, you know, come to the middle if there's a middle ground. But they clearly didn't. They asked So you're definitely saying no, like you are not accepting this offer. I said, well, not as it stands. That's kind of an open door to say, is there, you know, I would have maybe not listened to something. And I'm glad I didn't, because what if they had only cut it by 28% or something, you know, and I might have stayed because that was a lot of money. And we got four daughters. I got remarried. We have two each. So we have four together. We got three in college, or two in college, one graduated, one's going to go. Like, you know, we have overhead still. And yeah. I don't feel that old. Like, I feel like I can still do more things. I'm not ready to retire. And it was the right move for everybody. They saved some money, and I replaced it with Caesars and the other things I'm doing. So everybody did okay.
Yeah. At the time, did you think it would be okay?
I didn't know. I had a good amount of confidence, and the incoming calls quickly kind of led me to believe, like, oh, this is going to turn out okay. Like, I had no idea that many people would care, period. Like, the thing, I don't know if you read the thing I wrote for the LA Times, which was directed by John Walsh, the old exalted ruler of ESPN. I don't mean old like he's old, although he is. but good old friend, and he was there when I was there, obviously. He called me a couple days after I announced that I was leaving, and he just kind of said, I want you to do something. Do it for me. Do it for yourself. Put down on paper how you feel about everything that went down. Tell your own story, because everybody's writing stories about you, and you should write your own. You're a good writer. Write your story. And for, like, God, I'm so exhausted. Like, you know, every day felt like 20 hours long, and calls and friends and everything. And I just sat down that Saturday, like 4 days later, and I did it. And we got a hold of the LA Times, and they printed it, you know, 5 days later, whatever it was.
Yeah, I remember.
One thing I said in there, which I wasn't saying it for effect. It was really true. When I put my little tweet out the day that Norby and I had our call that I was leaving, which was a Monday the 10th, I still had like eight shows to go. Like I was still on the schedule to keep working. So it was a really bizarre period. Like, I have announced on Twitter, which is where everybody goes to announce things. And all of a sudden my phone's just like blowing up, binging, you know, that all these people cared, or they liked it, one or the other. But I was surprised that many people gave a damn about my stupid little ESPN career. Then I was further surprised that many people were quickly calling, like, hey, we like you. You want to talk to us? So,
Right. I did, you know, I think I had written it at the time. I mean, it's one of those things where I feel like there's this connection, people my age group, that we have with those old time, and I don't mean old like you said about John, Sports Center anchors, that, you know, there is a nostalgia there that is very, very powerful. And when you talk about it, if I talk about it, I come off as a completely old fart, because I'm talking about the time when you didn't get highlights on the internet, and the internet wasn't around, and Twitter, you watched SportsCenter for everything. And I think that I could see where you didn't get how strong that connection is, because I think we don't even think about it until that happens. You know, we see, oh, Kenny Mayne's not at ESPN. Wait, why? Wait, you know, even though maybe we're not watching Cubs Marlins highlights, like you said, every night, we like the comfort in knowing Kenny Mayne is at ESPN and doing SportsCenter.
Yeah, I found that. It was interesting how many people, like, you get stopped at airports or whatever, and they'd ask how I'm doing. Oh, no, everything's fine, man. I'm doing this and I'm doing that. And it's like, well, that's great for you, but I don't have you on the, you know, like, and that was really sweet that people would put it that way, that selfishly they've lost something. And again, I'm not making it sound like I'm any big deal, but there is a certain class of people or age group of people that definitely grew up, you know, 80s and 90s and early 2000s. And they got used to that. That was like, I used to watch Walter Cronkite. I'm that old. Or there was Dan Rather. You know, and I wanted that consistency. Wait, why is that guy subbing on the CBS Evening News? That sucks. You know?
Yeah.
And I still think we, and now they, are still doing great sports centers. They're different, and the information's out there, and it's a different show because it's not brand new news that so-and-so won such-and-such game if you don't live in that market.
Right.
But shows are good. The shows are clean and they're fancier and they got better graphics. You know, you could argue actually they're better shows. It's just a different era, you know, of when the shows are being played out. But life goes on. Like, I don't know. There's always a whole bunch of stuff I always wanted to do. And in a way, ESPN, not ESPN itself, was keeping me from it. But the fact I was with ESPN, had that commitment, had so many days and recovery days. Oh, I'm doing it again now. I never could do those other things. I didn't have the time, and obviously now I have the time.
I want to get into those things. Just a couple of more to wrap up the ESPN thing. You mentioned you put out the tweet, and then you still had eight shows left. Were ESPN higher ups pissed that you had put that tweet out with HO's left?
They didn't say anything. I think it was brought up, do you want to do some kind of release together? And I was like, not really. I'll do my release and you guys do yours. Like, I mean, if I'm leaving, why would I collaborate with you on, you know, I get to say what I want to say, don't I? And I didn't even bash them anyway, right? I just said, hey, I didn't do the personal news, but it kind of was. I kind of made it a joke, you know, yet it was also true. I think I said something about I'll miss the people and I'll miss the vending machines over by the Scott Van Pelt area, which I really do miss. They were
what is the vending machine. What's the Kenny Mayne go-to at the vending machine?
I'm trying to cut down on sugar, but definitely, you know, late night Milky Way. Probably Milky Way would be the candy bar.
Milky Way much better than a Snickers. Yeah, I don't like the nuts. Yeah.
Sometimes the Milky Way will kind of like sting if you have a filling. It just like, you know, there's a lot of sugar. That's why. Second free shout out for Olipop, because I want to do more commercials for them. This is very funny. I was on Lebatard's podcast, I think the next day or 2 days later. I can't remember. And he asked, well, what are you going to do? I said, hell, I don't know, dude. I'm going to go golf. I'm golfing right now. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to figure it out. But one thing I'll probably try to do is commercial work. I've done a lot of them. I'll be pitching ideas to different companies. In fact, there's this one company I'd love to do work for. And I mentioned Olipop. They're like a low sugar pop, right? Like a Coke with 2 grams of sugar instead of 40. And they heard about it. We got a hold of each other. We literally made a commercial deal over the phone. I think it was the next night. And we shot it 4 days later and it aired 3 days after. Like, never happens, right? And so
the power of the Dan Lebatard show.
I'll just mention companies on podcasts. No, it doesn't work that way. Usually most companies are pretty slow and they need a lot of meetings and focus groups and all that kind of good stuff. But no, nobody got weird about, I mean, they probably saw that was free country. I didn't say anything bad about the company and I still haven't, but I still had those 8 shows to go. So it was super weird going into the building and everybody's looking at me like, you know,
you're still here.
Happens, half out, but we did good shows. And I really appreciate that they let me do my last show the way we did my last show.
I want to get into that last show before we do one last thing before we talk about the last show. Because I thought, obviously, I agree with you. You put out the tweet, even with 8 shows left, that's not something they should really get on you about. They're letting you go. And you, like you said, the tweet was funny. It was, I thought it was classy. It wasn't anything. Did you get blowback, though, when you revealed, as I mentioned on the Deitch podcast, how much, you know, in this business, money is like so taboo. You know, you know, you'll hear that what Romo makes, or you'll hear what Mike Greenberg makes, but you never hear this company offered me a 60% pay cut. That's like taboo. That's never out there. You went there. What was the reaction to that like?
It was 61%. But I don't know. Part of me regrets that I did it. I've talked to Gretchen about this and she's like, you just answer the guy's question. Like I didn't say, hey, Richard Deitch, call me up and I'll tell you what their cut. He called me. He asked the question, like, how bad was it? How bad was the cut? I guess I could have said it was significant. That would have been an answer. I just kind of blurted it out. I didn't have any, you know, I didn't have an agenda going in that I'm going to kill that company by naming. Because on the other, it backfired in the sense, public relations wise, there were some people who were like, what a dick. He's still making blankety blank, even at 61% cut, because he was already over here. And, you know, how dare, because there's, you know, look, I have a heart for regular working people. Like I'm one too. I just happened to get lucky and get in the field that paid a little bit more and you could do some side jobs and whatnot. But, you know, my dad never made more than like 50 grand back when middle class existed and, you know, raised 4 kids. And we thought we were rich. We lived on a lake south of Seattle that he bought for $30,000, you know, an acre. So I come from that kind of blue collar ethic. I think I was a garbage man, sold prepaid legal insurance. I made garbage cans. I sold long distance for MCI. That was my last job before ESPN. So I don't think I'm some, you know, elitist, you know, some classist thing going on here that I'm up here and I'm looking down on, you know, I was just answering the damn question. Right. I made a certain amount. I get to choose where I get to work just like everybody else and whatever job they get to choose if they want to work wherever they work. And I just likened it to, they set an over under on me and I quit and now I'm playing the over. Like I stick a gamble on myself, like the old Steve Crist book, what was it called? Betting on Yourself, Betting on Myself, the Daily Racing Form guy.
Right.
That's a good way.
Yeah, I mean, I think I had written at the time, you know, for me, I don't think your salary was relevant there. To me, any human being, no matter what their salary is, whether you're making 80 grand or 8 million, I think if someone comes to you after 27 years and they want you to take a 61% pay cut, like that's the story. Not, you know, so I get where people are coming from on that because you'd still be making a lot of money. But to me, that's the secondary part. The first part is this is what your company is asking you to do.
Agreed. It always gets weird whenever money comes up.
Right.
It's weird for couples, married couples. Isn't that like the biggest source of contention ever? Like finances and what are we doing with this money? And, you know, like, right. So money comes up in any conversation. It always weirds people out. I didn't advertise it. We didn't say what the number was, but I just said, you know, if I make, you know, $1 an hour, I'm now making 39 cents. And it just seemed like too much.
Right.
It was just enough of a cut to say, I'm going to go play the over, see what happens out there in the real world.
Yeah. You did have a great last show, Marshawn Lynch and Aaron Rodgers.
Jamal Crawford, Sue Bird. And Fred McGriff.
The question that was at the top of my mind more than anything when I watched it back in preparation for this is, you had some beef with Aaron Rodgers about some crypto advice. Did you pull out of Bitcoin? Do you still have, because the Bitcoin now has gone up. I don't know a ton about it. But do you owe Rodgers an apology? Is the Bitcoin bounced back? Where do we stand with your Bitcoin involvement?
No, I still have what I bought, which wasn't even that much. The Bitcoin crypto stuff was a prop to have a good joke.
Okay. So that's you wanted to get the effort in. You wanted to say, fuck you, Aaron Rodgers.
Precisely. That's the genesis of that one. So crypto could have gone up or down. I would have said the same joke part, but it was perfect that it went down at the time. No, I had interviewed him when he was doing the Jeopardy thing. And I don't remember if it made the piece. I feel like it was at the very end of the conversation. And then we kept talking after we were done taping. And he was hyping crypto. And I texted him on the side like, hey, I seriously know very little. I know vaguely what it is. I took real money and buy some pretend money and hope other people buy it. And then my pretend money is worth more real money. Do I have it? And he said, yeah, exactly. So I bought some, not a ton, and it immediately goes down. And we really did have a comforter situation at home. Like it was just ripped up and Gretchen kept saying, I need to get a new one. And I was about to quit. She's like, I'll wait till you get a new job. Like, you know, she's like watching the money. So it worked like 3 days before that. Driving down the street, I was like, oh, that's a good premise. I'll set him up with, hey, thanks for that great crypto advice. Now I've lost my job. Gretchen just wants a fucking comforter here. You know, yeah.
My next question was going to be, did Gretchen ever get the comforter?
Yeah, she did it. She has a box coming in every half hour around here. So
I'm going to put you on the spot here. And if you don't want to answer it, I totally understand it. So you could tell me to move on. What is my question?
How do I feel about what went down with him and COVID vaccinations?
I was actually going to be more specific on it and say, clearly, if anyone follows you on Twitter, you would say Kenny leans on the liberal side of things. I'm not really in, I don't want to go there with the COVID. My bigger issue is with the rant Aaron had about this is woke culture and the woke mob trying to get him, which would seem to really conflict with your views. And obviously friends can agree to disagree. I'm just wondering if you had a conversation with him about it and what your thoughts were on that.
COVID. And yeah. I said, get well, get rest, get vaccinated. Like, that's right. Like, I'm listening to people who have dedicated their entire careers to infectious disease control. And no, has Fauci been correct every step of the way? No, because it's a brand new thing that happened once every 100 years and mistakes were made and fixes were fixed. And I'm just leaning on the science side. I'm no specialist. I haven't put in, you know, decades of research into this. And they're saying all the studies I keep reading tell me that vaccinations are the way to go because it minimizes the number of times more that it's going to spread, right? And you look at the people who are in the hospital right now, we're still losing, aren't there 1,000 people dying a day still? It's a big number, whatever it is.
And the numbers are going up, unfortunately.
And winter's coming, we're coming back indoors. Right. A lot of people don't do the masks. And I'm sticking with science. That's where I stand. And I didn't have to like yell at him or say anything direct at him. I made my point clear, like get the fucking vaccination. That's where I stand. Man. And it's sad that you said, like, I'm a liberal, therefore I'm for vaccinations and others.
I know. Isn't it crazy?
I know how you put it and how you meant it, but yeah, that's crazy.
Well, Well, my issue, I didn't want to get into the whole thing, but my issue with this, with everyone saying now the vaccine is political, is, okay, the vaccine came out under Donald Trump.
Yeah, they just didn't roll it out.
Right. Like, Donald Trump didn't want to tell people to get this vaccine, but he wants credit for Operation Warp Speed and creating the vaccine. So it's Donald. So it's, I don't see how it is political if that's the case, but
there's a whole bunch of stuff that doesn't add up with the way things are right now. That could be like 10 hour. I'm a Gaslit Nation podcast fan. Sarah Kendzior, Andrea Chalupa, and Positive America. And I like what Jared Sexton's doing on Twitter. There's a whole bunch of people. So yeah, I'm alarmed at the state of affairs in the country. And the fact that something like what about all the other vaccinations the kids have to have to get into kindergarten?
Right.
Why is there no outcry about rebellion, whatever, you know, like all of it's insane. We are living in like both insane and dangerous times. And on that very point though, I'm pro vaccination. I pretty much made that clear to everyone, and I hope other people continue to get it.
Did Aaron thank you for the advice?
I didn't hear back. okay. You can argue that it's not perfect. I'll agree with that.
Yeah.
The same with the flu shot, right? You can still get the flu if you have the flu shot, because it might be a different strain or whatever. But in general, it's those who are getting it are in better position and helping others be in a better position than those who aren't.
And to piggyback off something you mentioned earlier, what I get frustrated with the Fauci stuff is there's a difference between being wrong and deliberately, you know, when I hear Fauci lied, it's like, no, he didn't lie. He was wrong because we've never had the COVID-19 pandemic going on. So we're doing this as we go. So the man is getting things wrong. It's not
and meanwhile,
lying.
The last president was trying to minimize testing and minimize, you never want it to look bad, right? Like if the numbers are low, I look good. If the numbers are, you know, all of it was just nonsense. And meanwhile,
are we coming up on the second or third Easter where this was supposed to be over?
I've lost track. All I know is listening to sound advice from people who have dedicated their entire career to this very thing about trying to stop the spread of terrible things like this that might pop up. Those guys seem like the people to listen to, not people who just like my aunt on Facebook. Like, no thanks.
Well, the text that you really should send Aaron Rodgers is, why is Joe Rogan a better friend to you than I am? But, you know, I don't know if Aaron will find that amusing. Because he listened to one friend. Let's try to get him to listen to the other friend.
Jamal Crawford gave me great advice on this very topic. I talked to him the other day. And he should be in the NBA. That makes me sad also. But he's doing great on the whole NBA kind of sidecast thing. He's smart guy, great guy, one of the sweetest people you'll ever meet. He just said, hey, sometimes friends go down a certain path. You don't stop being their friend. You don't stop loving them or caring about them, but you don't have to agree with where they're coming from. Like that's being a friend too.
Well, speaking of that, you are very political on Twitter. Do you feel like that's been a benefit to leaving ESPN, that you can now really let it fly? Because obviously at ESPN, you have to be more careful with what you're putting on Twitter.
I don't get any warnings anymore, if that's what you're asking.
Oh, that's what I wanted. Okay, you just reminded me. You did an interview, I think it was The Ringer, where you said that there was a Twitter watch list that you were on. Is that true?
As far as I know, there was, I don't know if it still exists this day, but at the time that I knew about it, a panel, I don't know if it was three or five executive types, and they would just kind of be, oh, did you see what so-and-so wrote? Oh, and then they'd kind of take it to the committee. Is this bad? Is this okay? Should we just give them a kind of a soft warning? Should we give them a heart? I mean, I always said I shot from beyond the Jamel line, and I think you know what that means, right? Like a three-point, but Jamel went in the paint. Jamel went hard in the paint. Yeah. I was softer, and I'll admit it. She had way more courage, probably always does. She just said what she said, and I would do it in code. Like if Trump is up at the podium, I would at that very moment put in Stevie Wonder lyrics to He's Mr. Know-It-All. If you know that album, Inner Visions, look up the words. So I would typically do mine kind of coded, but it was pretty obvious where I was coming from. There's a way to say a lot by saying a little, which is kind of how I still operate mostly. But mostly what I do now, if you're saying I do things more forthrightly, if I see something I really believe in, I'll just retweet it. Like, you know, Sarah Kendzior puts on out, Jared Sexton puts on, you know, whoever, and let more people know about this thing. These people who know more about it than I,
right.
You know, I mean, Sarah is like a expert on authoritarianism, and typically you'd think that means she's covering, you know, small nations with dictators, and then she just covered the United States instead.
Right.
Got into what's going on here, and
yeah.
So yeah.
So how often would you hear from an ESPN higher up about a tweet? Was it a regular occurrence, or just once in a while, or not at all?
No, I mean, it was always there to don't go too far past that line you went last time, or else, you know. But I stuck up for my black fellow citizens, stuck up for immigrants at the border. What else did I stick up for? Like, and I'm not trying to be, I'll be called woke here. And what's the other one they like to say about you? Virtue signaling. So I stood up in certain cases for things that I thought needed standing up for, including Jamel. Like, I remember, like I said, I think to the effect, one of my friends is being threatened by the president of the United States for her job, and I protest. I think that's all I said. I didn't get in trouble for that one. But the one that I got called on was when he had one of those fake physicals, you know, with just the ridiculous results, just preposterous, right? I was out in Seattle at the time. I said, the president's doctor just timed me in the 40 and 4.2 wearing Snoop Dogg slippers. And I thought that was a good joke.
Yeah.
And it really didn't criticize the president. It was making fun of his doctor, but it also tangentially, I guess, was, you know, they called me on that one. I was like, what do you mean? That was a great joke. How can I get in trouble for that? There was another one. I think I said this more than once. If somebody lies to me like 400 times, I have a difficult time believing the next thing they say. At the time, I was talking about Sarah Huckabee. She was at the podium lying about something, and they thought I was talking about Trump. I mean, got a 2-for-1 on that.
But you never got suspended, right?
I have some warnings I'm going to print and frame.
Oh, I want to. Can I get them for my column? I would love to post them. That would be phenomenal. I'll take them.
And again, this sounds like I'm bashing ESPN. I'm, again, just answering your questions honestly.
Yeah, yeah.
This is the state of affairs. But now, in their defense, I totally get why they didn't want the problem. Like, they're a for-profit company, and do we want to piss off 47% of the electorate or whatever it is, you know, that watches them?
But can I give you my theory? I don't want to cut you off, but can I give you my theory on why I think that's nonsense? I think by them making it an issue, it ends up becoming more of a problem.
Right.
For example, what I thought was one of, maybe I've written this so many times, the most ridiculous thing I've seen in this sort of area was when Lebatard got in trouble on his radio show for talking about how he felt about the night before when Trump and the rally with Go Back to Where You Came From, when he has parents who are immigrants. If ESPN doesn't go after Lebatard for what he says, the story dies in a day. It's over in one day. People could get mad at Lebatard, and Fox News and Facebook will rip him for 24 hours, then they move on to the next thing. But by ESPN disciplining someone for something so absurd, that gives it, then I'm writing about it, and then Deitch is writing about it, and then it goes on for a week.
There's more oxygen, for sure. No, I always looked at it like, I remember saying, people would argue, like, you're doing sports, man. You do Cubs Marlins highlights. Why do you have to comment about society or what's... I said, because first, I'm a citizen. Like, first, I grew up, that's what I wanted to cover. Like, sports was a fallback that I somehow got into and ended up doing what I did. My original plan, I would want it to be like a making documentaries for Frontline at this point. You know, that's where I thought I was headed out of college. And I always said, if you're not going to say something now, when are you ever going to say, you know, like years from now, I think our kids and their kids, their grandkids, they're going to ask, what did you say during those times? And the funny thing is, there's people on the other side of it that think I'm the crazy one, right? That they think they're right. And so they get their right to say what they want to say. But
To piggyback off what you're saying, when that Lebatard thing happened, there were people who were not, you know, crazy MAGA nut jobs who were, you know, you would think maybe even liberal down the middle, who said, you know, well, listen, ESPN's in the right here because this is a sports show. He's supposed to do sports. They've told him to stick to sports. He's also a human being. If you're a human being, mm-hmm. whose parents are immigrants, and everyone's chanting, go back to where you came from. How do you expect that person to just sit there and talk about who's the best three-point shooter in the NBA? Yeah. You can't expect that on a radio, because radio is different than TV. I could see if you're doing sports on highlights, maybe that, you know, you're weaving in a joke that people, okay, he's doing a radio show. It's like the most personal sort of medium right. there is. You don't
and
want him to talk.
Cultural anyway. You know, his show wasn't just talking about best three
right.
points. I did a thing during the Peacock Olympics coverage. You know, you remember the U.S. women's soccer team was out there being rooted against by half the country, right?
Right.
Because
right.
Dear Leader told them that these are terrible people and Meg Rapinoe and all that. And I remember my lead into it was just like, you know, mental health has been a huge issue at these Olympics. And can you imagine being on the women's soccer team, you know, wearing the American uniform, and you know that, I don't know if it's half the country, but a good number of people were rooting for them to lose because the Apprentice host told them that they're bad people and they should root against them. Like, how is that a thing, you know? And exactly. I remember when I read it, I got like choked up. I barely got the whole thing out because I was so... I just couldn't believe this is the state of our country.
And no blowback from NBC on that?
No. To their credit, they were wide open for UBU. No. Like, you know, no. And that's the only one that you could even argue I got, quote unquote, political. And I wouldn't even say I was. I was just reporting facts. That was the crazy thing. I remember making this point. I said, if we just laid out actual facts, no opinion, just fact in a row, it will seem detrimental to the Apprentice host, right? Because... facts are not in his favor, at least where I stand. It's not even making an opinion. It's not saying, I believe that he's terrible. You know, it's just this happened. All of it's on his watch. Those facts add up to something detrimental to him by most standards. Now, of course, we're in 2021 America. So I've sighed a lot for 5 years.
A lot of sighing, and it still goes on. All right, let's go. I want to talk about what you're doing now.
Let's talk about three-point shooters.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, here's something fun I want to talk to you about. You had talks at one point with Comedy Central.
That was a great transition. We just sighed.
I just changed and just like that. Yeah.
Move the chain.
Yeah. You had talks with Comedy Central at one point about doing a sports themed daily show. Is that true? Yeah. Okay.
Long ago.
Now, go ahead. You go.
Well, I thought you were asking how did it come about? I'm friends with Jimmy Kimmel, and Daniel Kellison, his friend and old producer, was dreaming up a show for Comedy Central. They wanted to go Daily Show, then Sports Daily Show, or call it what you want, right? And he told Jimmy's looking for somebody like me, and Jimmy's like, well, why don't you call him then? Because he's already him. And Jimmy just kind of cut to the chase. So he calls. I said, yeah. So Daniel did most of the legwork, but I was in on it. And we met with the head of Comedy Central. Little secret meeting. This is a long time. This might be 20 years ago. I don't even know. When did Norm Macdonald end up doing something like that there, right? Rest in peace.
Yeah. I don't know if that was the Norm thing was 20 years ago. Well, maybe like 2000. Maybe close.
Long time ago. So we met. I remember I was covering a horse race, I think, in San Diego, Del Mar. Ran up to L.A., had this dinner, had a great talk. You know, Daniel's laying out the thing. He had... what they call decks these days, you know, pages, whatever. And we thought we had a pretty cool idea. And it wasn't really much more than I already do this. I already do SportsCenter. I'm doing the very show. We're telling you I can do the same show that I already do, but we're going to be able to do it a little bit looser, a little R-rated maybe, right?
Right.
Get it crazier than do all the stuff that we've always wanted to do on a real SportsCenter, but now we get to do it because we're with Comedy Central. And they didn't pull the trigger. They just kicked it down the road. It never happened. But then Norm did get to do it for a while. I forget how long that lasted.
See, the reason I brought it up is I wanted to pick your brain on this because I've always had the opinion that comedy sports shows are almost impossible to pull off. And you could have the funniest person. Now, you're obviously, listen, every sports fan would agree. You talk about who are the funniest people in sports, your name would always come up. So it no matter who you have as the host, I think that is a really tough thing to do on a daily basis in terms of, is there enough content that's funny? Would you just be making fun of the same thing? You know, would you just be making fun of, like, you know, Jerry Jones and the same cast of characters? I think, and, you know, it's almost been proven out because we've seen people try it. a daily comedy sports show. I feel like networks have always wanted to do it. I feel like it's almost impossible to pull off. You think? Do you think it can be done successfully?
Well, I think the biggest issue would be the usage rights fees and so forth from the leagues. Would they allow you? Because if I were in charge and we said we're doing a show tonight, we would just do the exact same model at sport. We'd cover tonight's sports, but let the commentators get three times dumber than they already do, right? Like take it way off the edge. So I don't think it's that hard. I think we just do what we already do or what I used to do and have no rules. Because I always knew when I did SportsCenter, get a little crazy, get a little silly, but I just felt the walls closing. Don't go that far because they you might get yelled at. So we always took it as far as we could before the Jamel.
Yeah, because there's also a line in how much you can make fun of the athletes, the players. You know, I guess I'm thinking of it like, you know, if I'm home watching a game with a bunch of friends and a quarterback, I don't know, let's say the snap goes over the quarterback's head and then he picks it up and tries to fling it and it's a bad interception. You're like, look at this fucking idiot. I don't know if you can do that on a sports show.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess we won't know until it's tried because I don't know that it's been perfectly tried. You could also do crazier interviews. Like one bit that I pushed forever and I just kept getting shut down. You know, when we go to the podium after big games, LeBron's coming to the podium, new on SportsCenter. And that was, LeBron's talking, go, you know. And nothing against LeBron, but you know, most of the time, guys ask dumb questions and he gives some answer. You know, it's really not that exciting, right?
Right.
I wanted to leave our mics open while they're at the podium and do like, what is it, Mystery Science Theater? You know, just drop in some jokes as they're talking, right?
You know who used to do that? Mike and the Mad Dog in the old days used to do that, and it was hysterical. It was hysterical.
I do it still with my wife in particular. We'll be in the car. And there'll be a song on, and there's always space in between lyrics. So there's a way, especially if you know the song, right? What's Tom Petty going to do? And then Tom Petty says what he's going to do, right? Like, it's kind of like that, right? It's just playing up. Like, I used to love doing the SportsCenter highlights before they went mostly to music background. You'd hear the announcer of the baseball game, long drive, and then you could just play off, yeah, sure was long drive. You know, like, there was a way in real time. You just got to be quick. You know, you got to play.
If it's done, I hope it's done maybe on like a Netflix or something where there's no rule. Like you said, you can't be restricted. You can't have rules.
Yeah.
You got to be able to do what you want to do. Before we wrap up. So tell me, I am a bettor, but even I'm blown away by what this gambling thing has become. And now you're a spokesperson for Caesars. So is it you just trying to get people to sign up to use Caesars for their wagers? Is that what the gig is?
You kind of went to the heart of it, didn't you? I am representing Caesars as best I can to bring glory to Caesars. Therefore, if people think Caesars is cool by my association and the little projects I do, the little videos and cartoons, right? I'm like Joe Louis was a greeter at Caesars back in the day, right? I went to school at UNLV. The first place I ever visited on my recruiting trip was Caesars. So it's kind of funny how it all, you know, came back.
I'm a big Caesars fan.
It'd be a really long title on a card, but yeah, I'm an ambassador, I think they call me. I'm supposed to do projects that help Caesars look cool. Therefore, you know, just like people do commercials for dog food, right? Or Coca-Cola or whatever, Olipop. And by that person doing that commercial for that company has a better image and people are attracted to that company. That's what
I'm doing. How is shooting that commercial with Peyton and Eli?
Oh, it's fun. I haven't seen the one I'm in yet. I think they released the other. They did several. Halle Berry also in that commercial. That was fun. Oscar winner. Trey Wingo is also doing something similar. He's doing a little more real sports, breaking down the games and all that. I'm out here doing Silly World cartoons and whatever the hell else I do for them. And also, sometimes it might just be literally showing up at an event. You know, here I am, part of their team doing something. So it's good. I'm happy with that. And I don't even know what my next project is. Right now we're going through all the ones we just shot. We shot a whole bunch of funny stuff with the Mannings and some other athletes that were there.
Getting a gig that requires you to get out to Vegas every now and again is a good way to get that post ESPN life going.
Like I said, I don't know if I said it here or earlier, it feels like this is all part of the ESPN pension plan. Like people, it turned out, thought I wasn't horrible and they've they want me to do stuff. Peacock, I appreciate that relationship. And I think I'm creating some others. Like I said, I just talked to some podcast people yesterday about a couple ideas.
And well, I was going to say, one of the things I was going to mention is that I'm just beyond shocked you don't have a podcast yet, because everybody has a podcast, literally.
Agreed. Everybody, many, many companies came with that idea, but the Caesars one just kind of stood out for the next bigger thing I wanted to do. I didn't want to just immediately, here's Kenny's football podcast, you know, starting week one.
Do you have in your head what kind of podcast you'd want to do? Like interviews, comedy, everything? Do you have in your head what you'd want it to be?
Wide open, where it might be one thing and then get bored with that after 6 months and then do a different thing. Yep. But I don't necessarily want to do it three times a week and have to hustle up guests all the time. And nothing against that. Like, I'm sure you do well at it. But for what else I have going,
yeah,
I don't want that. I don't want to be tied to that. I'd rather do it more singularly, like knock a bunch of them out and roll them out Netflix style. Here's 10 great right. interviews with so-and-so famous people, whatever.
Yeah, it's funny.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, you go.
Gambling thing is funny because don't you remember Romo got in trouble or was
disallowed? Oh, yeah, for the fantasy. That was fantasy.
Fantasy football league that everybody has a fantasy team. Everybody.
Yep.
Players probably have them.
I often wonder what he thinks about this whole thing.
Oh, my God, it's just insane. And then on ESPN, we were not allowed ever, if you even subtly mention there was a bet on a game or the over under, you know, whatever. And then it just all started loosening up. Now it's been a while, right? Van Pelt show very much dedicated to the bad beats and gambling references all day long. ESPN then got into a relationship with Caesars, as it turns out, Caesars William Hill. That's the betting line that they always quote, right?
Yep,
so it's kind of funny in a sense. I'm working for a company that is still tied to my old company, but you know, working in different lanes.
Yeah. We mentioned the Mannings. Last thing here. When that show was announced, the Manning cast, before it launched, there was speculation about a host. And I remember thinking the perfect host would be Kenny Mayne. And it was right after you had left ESPN. And then eventually they end up not going with a host. And they've obviously done it properly because they're a successful. Yeah. Would that have interested you? Because the thing we always heard about it, and Kyle Brandt tried out for it, and he's talked about it on this podcast, is whoever took that job as a host, it still has to be all about Peyton and Eli. They couldn't get in their stuff. You seem like the type you'd want to get in your stuff. Would that have been a gig you think you could have done and would have been fun? Do you think it's better the way it is?
Yeah, I mean, I know both of them a little bit. We'd have to work it out and decide going in, are we sharing space? Or if I'm talking, am I stealing from you? You guys are bigger stars than I am. You know, like, kind of figure out what everybody's role would be. I could see doing that with somebody, just me and an ex-football player. You know, like, I think, yeah. Just saying, like, I remember there was a thing on Twitter a while back. It said, describe your job without, it's the old, say what you do without saying what you do kind of thing. Where are you from without saying, you know? And I was going to say, I basically, for a living, now do what used to get me sent in the hall in fifth grade, which is, what's the most absurd thing I can say right now to make everybody laugh and not get in trouble or maybe get in trouble?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah. So you said you're friends with Peyton and Eli. Would we be able to ever see you on there as a guest, or would ESPN put the kibosh on that?
I would say I'm friendly. I don't know if we've joined.
Okay.
You know, we don't like trade notes or anything. No, I've been around. I've done stories with them both. I've been around them a few times. Like, I think we're friendly. I don't know. I think there are other channels too.
There are, but that seems to be the hot show right now.
Right. They're not the, I'm not knocking them, what they're doing.
No,
I'm saying they're not the first ones to think of doing an alternative cast to a thing that's already happening. Right. That's been done for quite a while.
And we're going to see more and more of them. That's for sure.
Yeah. No, it's funny. It gives people different choices. There's nothing wrong with that. I don't know how everybody's making money, because there are so many things to watch. I can't get to the bottom of Netflix, and that's just one channel. It's
you know, they're making money. They're making money because whether you watch it or not, there's dopes like me who pay for like 12 streaming services. Everybody was
going to quit cable and do just. Instead, we have full cable and 29 apps now. So
It's a theme on this podcast all the time. It just, all I want to do is get rid of some of these. And then there's always something on one of these apps that I have to have. It's a
I had to go through my Apple because it shows up on my credit card. You know, they charge you $1.99 for Google Earth or whatever, you know. And then I saw, like, this is about 2 years ago. I called my daughters. I said, hey, do you have blah, 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 whatever this stupid thing? Oh, yeah, I signed up for that in seventh grade. It's like, so I've been paying it. For 9 years, I've been paying for whatever the hell Riley signed up for in seventh grade. That's how a lot of people are making money. People forget.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Do I have to pay for this? Is there a fee?
Well, this podcast is free, thank God. Good. So thank you. I appreciate you coming on and being so honest. And best of luck with all of the gigs. I'm sure there'll be a podcast coming and Caesars and what Olipop. Is that what we want to get an
free endorsement? Shout out from? Olipop.
Olipop. Yeah. Pay attention here to Kenny. Kenny, thanks a lot. I appreciate it. It was
great
fun.
Seeing you and a great interview. Thank you.
Thank you. Be well.
See you next time.
All right. Time for our weekly train of thought segment. So I bring in my friend, as I do always, every week, as always, Sal Licata from WFAN Radio in New York, SNY-TV. And first order of business, congratulations to Sal. Last week, he was named the permanent overnight host at WFAN in New York, which is a big deal. So congratulations.
Thank you. And I appreciate you holding on for some information there. That I know you were teasing me.
Oh, he was made the permanent host, not last week, but.
No.
Is there you've been doing the overnights for a very long time. Now it's like your official full-time WFAN staffer. Is there an official start date or you just keep doing what you're doing?
Yeah. So November 15th, this past Monday morning, technically was a start date. And it is different. Like, I know I'm doing technically the same thing. And a lot of people were like, oh, I just assumed that you were full time. But actually being named full time, a press release, I've never had that before. And for somebody who grew up listening to The Fan and loving those guys like you, like, this is, you know me for a long time. This is all I've ever wanted, really. And to have that time slot, it's special. So it's really, especially after what happened in my career, you know, the ups and downs, to be back there and be accepted in as a full time member with my own show. Right. I don't even know if I could have dreamt that. So it's great.
I got in an argument with someone and I can't remember who it was. It must have been one of my friends or I got in an argument with someone because when I said, oh, Sal's official overnight, they're like, well, he's been doing it. I'm like, yeah, well, now he's like a full timer and it's official. Yeah, but he's been doing it. I'm like, yeah, but it's still different. Stop arguing with everyone. Everyone thinks life is Twitter now and you got to argue everything.
It is a big difference that people don't get. There's obviously the technical boring stuff, you know, vacation
health
days.
Insurance.
Yeah, right. I haven't had that stuff in 10 years. So I've been a freelancer in this business, a lot of freelance work, you get paid per shift. Every time I took off, I don't get paid, so it is nice to have that support. And
for non-New Yorkers who may be learning about you through this podcast, you can listen to Sal, if you like his takes here, on the Odyssey radio app. From when to when? Given what time is this shift exactly?
It depends on the night. Like if we have a game on, whether it's Monday Night Football or Yankees in season or the Nets, I'm on generally 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. If no game, then I'm on 12 a.m. to 5 a.m. A lot of the stuff is podcasted on, you know, The Fans. Yeah, they clip off stuff like that. Right. Now it's so different. Like you said, you can listen on an app or the Rewind app, but that's the regular time slot.
The amount of, believe me, it's more than a couple of people have told me, like, oh, I can't sleep at night, or when I have insomnia, or when I have anxiety and I'm up at night, I put on The Fan, and you know, there you are from 2 to 5.
It is surprising, dude. I'll tell you, it is surprising how many people are listening at those hours and how many people are calling. Last night we did the Syndergaard stuff. All night long there were calls from 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. All night long calls. It's crazy.
Yeah. I just hit my microphone, so I want to apologize to Shelby. He's probably freaking out. Sorry about that. My producer, Shelby, who's so great. 2 to 5, WFAN. You can get it online on an app on Odyssey if you want to listen to Sal.
You could have scooped Marshan with this one, and I know. You held it, and that's why we're friends.
Well, Neil Best, I think, is the one who broke the story.
Yeah, which was surprising because Marshan usually gets all this stuff. But
you
right,
told Best. Me not to break it. That's why I didn't break. What do you want me to? You can't knock me now.
Oh, I know.
2 to 5 a.m. for you threw me off when you returned the text at 4 a.m. the other night. I'm like, well, how was you up at 4? I didn't know what was going
on. I'm all over the place with that. Yeah.
All right. We should, you know, I was going to get into this later, but let's do it. All the people who are not from New York are probably going to get turned off, but let's just spend a quick minute before we get into the other topics, because I was going to do this at the end, but it ties in with you getting the overnight. Just So Sal gets the overnight. Part of the reason is because of WFAN New York legend Steve Summers retiring. I just have to say, I love Steve. You know, I'm a WFAN nut when I was a kid. I remember Steve doing the overnights. Do you remember him on? Because then he got moved to 10 a.m. and then he got moved to like the regular night shift. Do you remember him doing the overnights? Because I do, because I'm older than you.
I don't. My first memory of overnights was Beningo. So okay. I remember Steve, you know, the sweater and the schmooze with Russ Salzburg 10 to 1. That was awful. That's my first. Yeah, that's my first memory of him. And then evenings, yeah. And obviously I worked with him and produced a show in the evenings, but I know about Captain Midnight, but I don't remember listening to it back then. Okay. Probably a little before my time.
If you're not from New York, Steve Summers is a New York legend, basically, you know, when it comes to radio. Just the people who stand out on radio, I think, are unique, and he was absolutely unique.
The one thing I'll say about him, and you know this from listening, but I know from being there and doing it, he does shows like nobody else can do. I think there are others, you know, I go on there and yell about sports, whatever. Mike and the Mad Dog, same thing. Endless others, we basically do the same thing. Steve is the one guy of any host that I've ever come across or listened to that writes out his monologue. There's thought into it. There's wittiness to it. There's humor. He's a genius. I couldn't do it. I literally could not do what Steve does writing out those opens. I don't think anybody could, but there are others who could do what some of the other guys that do. But Summer, that's what made him so special and unique.
And he was on The Fan for 34 years. So he had a great run. So we both salute him for that. All right. Next topic here in the Train of Thought segment. Steph Curry went into Brooklyn last night, lit up the Nets. Warriors thumped them. And this isn't going to be a New York angle on this, so stick with it. I think one of the coolest things to see in sports, and at this point, you know, I'm jaded. It takes a lot for something in sports to get me excited. Like, you've seen it all. I love, though, when an opposing player goes into a visiting building and is so freaking good, the road fans are cheering for him. There was an MVP chant. There was that buzz. Like, when he got the ball and would start heaving the threes, the Brooklyn crowd was cheering for Steph Curry, which shows you, one, how special he is and how lethal he is. But I love that aspect of sports when because he's not really a villain. He's, you know, he's just so good that it's a respect thing. I love when that happens in sports. What about you?
He is the not only the best shooter I've ever seen in my life, the most fun player to watch. You know, I love LeBron, obviously Michael, whatever, but I don't know if there's ever been a player I enjoyed watching more than Steph Curry. The dude is unbelievable. And you're right. And there is a New York angle to it. With being that you're playing in Brooklyn, New York fans generally boo the opponent for lighting them up. And that would be the case at the Garden. But last night at the Barclays, you're right. I mean, they're cheering Steph Curry after pasting their team the entire night. It just shows you how great Steph Curry is as a player. He's got to be the most fun player to watch in the league, maybe ever.
I've never seen a player release the ball.
Oh, my God.
The pass gets to him. It's not even in his hands, and he's even a 30-for-3 that goes in. It's unbelievable to watch. You're 100% right on that.
Those are shots, and we grew up, you know, watching the Knicks in the 90s or whatever, just basketball in the 90s with the 80s and you know, the scores being in the 80s. Steph Curry takes those shots would get you ripped off the court years ago by Pat Riley or Jeff Van Gundy. Now he's pulling up from half court, mid-range, I mean, and just draining them with ease, looking like they're layups or free throws. It's unbelievable what he's done.
The release is just ridiculous. Let's get into some TV stuff here on the next Train of Thoughts topic. Got three TV things to discuss. First one, do you have any interest at all? I mean, you're a Falcons fan, so I'm going to guess answer is no. But do you have any interest at all in the ESPN Plus 10-part docuseries on Tom Brady called Man in the Arena?
It's about him and his life?
Well, I thought that's what it was about. They sent me screeners. I saw the first three episodes of the 10 parts. It's not about Tom Brady. It's about the Patriots. It's basically reliving every Patriots Super Bowl and their run. You know, Brady's in there talking, and when he talks, it's interesting. You don't learn anything new about Brady. And there are Patriots players. I said this on Twitter. Willie McGinnis and Rodney Harrison are in it as much as Brady. It's being sold as a Brady doc. Now, again, I've only seen three of 10. Bill is not in it from what I've seen so far. Okay. They don't have him as a sit down. from what I've seen. Now, again, I want to be clear. I've seen 3 of 10. So who knows what could happen in the other 7? I'm not watching the other 7 based on what I've seen in the first 3, because it's just basically it's Patriots porn. If you're a Patriot fan, you should absolutely watch it. If you're not a Patriots fan, I don't know how many episodes you're going to be able to watch that.
If it were, remember that Facebook thing that Brady did a few years back? That I was into.
That was better. That, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's a different. We don't see, I don't care about the football stuff. I watch the games. I live through it. So right. Unless it's special with Brady and Belichick and they're giving you a different thing that we haven't seen before, you know, and I like some of those things that the NFL Network will do behind the scenes, the bios on certain guys. I don't need to go back and relive. And I love the Patriots. I'm not a Patriots fan, but I have great respect for them because I love Belichick and Brady. Yeah. From what you're telling me, it doesn't sound like it would be of much interest.
I like there was stuff early on about Brady in college at Michigan that I found interesting. But once they get to the Patriots stuff, it's all about the Patriots winning the Super Bowls.
Is this supposed to be like their version of The Last Dance? Is that what this
yes,
is?
Yes. Okay. That's what a lot of people are taking it as. And
maybe in 20
not.
Years, it'd be good. Now, it's right. Like it's still happening. So
I wanted more Brady.
Yeah, right.
But, you know, another TV item here in the Train of Thought segment with Sal Licata from WFAN. The Hard Knocks is launching their first ever in-season show with focusing on the Colts that comes out this week. Do you have interest in that on HBO Max?
Honestly, not really. I might check it out. For some reason, I couldn't get into Hard Knocks this year, and I used to love – we talked about this. I used to love that show. I watched the first episode, gave the second one a chance, and I just was like, I'm not into this. And now, how far behind is it going to be as far as real time? Because it's one thing in the preseason, and in right. season, we're all up to date here, what's going on. So how far does it trail it?
That's a very good question that I don't know the answer to. What I was going to say is I agree with you that Hard Knocks for me has lost a lot of its luster over the past few years outside of that one season with the Browns, which I loved. But I will check this out and give it a try for one or two episodes just because I'm curious to see how it works in season. Like you said, how far back are they going? Is it up to date? Are you giving me anything that I'm going to learn something from? So I'll give it one, maybe two episodes, but I'm going to be out if it's just like, you know, regular.
I'm with you. I think it's worth everybody, if you have HBO, I think it's worth everybody, you know, the football fans who like Hard Knocks, give it a shot instead of just dismissing it. It's going to be different for sure than it would be in preseason. So I'd be curious to see.
I want to see how they handle in season. Yeah. The next TV topic, as we do every week, Curb. Episode 4, by far the wackiest and craziest of this season so far. Spoilers are coming. So if you don't want to hear Curb spoilers, go skip ahead or something like that. But it takes a lot for me to be like, oh my God, I can't believe they're doing this. Larry taking the Ku Klux Klan sheet to the cleaners. He was so adamant that he had to get the coffee out of the robe.
I watched the majority of that episode with my jaw dropped, probably like, oh my God, you know, and almost waiting to just be cringing. But of course, like Larry David does, it was funny. I mean, I thought the episode was great. There were a few laugh out loud moments. The dudes, you're right, that was out of control, but I thought it was probably my favorite episode this year.
You're not a coffee drinker, so can you relate to the cream shaming that was going on? That was a big theme.
No, I mean, no, my wife is, so I know how important that is. But no, right. I cannot relate necessarily to the cream shaming.
I enjoyed the cream shaming.
Yeah. You're a big coffee guy?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't like coffee. I didn't know you were a big coffee guy.
Well, I mean, I have a cup every morning and then maybe one in the afternoon.
Okay.
You know. But the cream shaming was funny. But just there's a line, I've always said this, like it's always to me little lines that aren't supposed to be the main focus that make me laugh the hardest. And when he convinces Susie to make another sheet because the other one got ruined at the cleaners, and he says something like, you know, can you have it in time for their next hate rally? I'm full laughing. Like it's just like, you know, and then, the fact that he would, you know, I tweeted after, I'm so happy he's uncancelable because the bit with the watermelon, I'm not sure anyone else could get away with on television.
Yeah, well, that's what I mean. He was going into stuff that should always be sensitive, but especially now, you better be careful. And I'm almost watching it going, oh my God, where is this going?
Right. Right.
But I did end up thinking that he, you know, made the most of it and thought it was funny.
Woody Harrelson was great.
Oh, God, he is the best. Oh, him, that is, that might be one of my, and I don't know, you got to go back and rank him. Him flipping out at the end, smashing the fruit. Fuck, he's great.
Yeah, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God, one of the great scenes. I love that. He legitimately lost it and was throwing.
And Vince Vaughn was great, too. The scene that he has with Kaley Cuoco about the Pirates. Why didn't you pick up the Pirates' booty? Just tremendous.
Siding with Larry. No, Larry's right. You should have just picked up the... Those two things.
I didn't like her smashing the thing in Larry's eyes. I thought that was... Like too Larry... Much. The Curb humor is a little bit above that, but that was... The Pirate's booty thing was great. Oh, and then he said something to Susie about... Susie's like, Pirate's booty, I would never eat that. She goes, I'd eat a potato chip. Like is what I love about the show when they get into that stuff. Yeah. All right, Sal. Again, congrats on your full-time WFAN gig, and thanks for doing the pod. And we'll see you next week.
Thank you. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you later.
Take it easy. All right, my thanks to Kenny Mayne and Sal Licata for this week's SI Media podcast. If you've missed any recent episodes or you're a new listener and want to check out what we've done in the past, we had WWE's Becky Lynch and The Ringer's Kevin Clark on the pod last week. 2 weeks ago, Al Michaels. 3 weeks ago, Chris Long. 4 weeks ago, Steve Levy from Monday Night Football. Jeff Garland from Curb Your Enthusiasm. All here on the SI Media podcast in the past month. So subscribe, and if you can leave a review, that helps as well. All right, that wraps it up for this week's episode. We'll see you next week right here on the SI Media podcast. Stay safe and take care.